Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have a really amazing guest. You know, it's a guest, you know, that has quite a journey, you know, from operator to then becoming a founder to then, you know, becoming an investor of a $2 billion, you know, dollar operation where they're deploying capital out of. But again, you know, he has some incredible, you know, successful exits. And we're going to be talking about building, scaling, financing, exiting, also investing. So all of the above. So brace yourself for a very inspiring conversation. And without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Tahir El Gamal. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Alejandro. I appreciate being here.
So originally born and raised in Cairo, in Egypt. So give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up over there?
It was a lot of fun. You know, growing up in Cairo is just the amount of history in that part of the world is just unbelievable. So you live history. And, you know, I grew up, I got an undergrad degree in EE, and then I came to the U.S.
And how did you get into problem solving? Because it sounds like engineering, you know, came knocking for you.
Numbers. So my favorite topic when I was very, very young was actually numbers. You know, they tell me, my parents told me that when I was like 4 or 5 years old, I analyzed all the numbers in the Cairo phone book. You know how many people live in Cairo?
A lot.
But that was my fun time when I'm by myself. It's just, I found numbers to be very therapeutic, actually.
So how does the opportunity of coming to the U.S. and to Stanford, you know, present itself? Because that played a key role in your life and in your career, too.
Yes. And, you know, I applied to two schools. Stanford was one of them. I got the acceptance from Stanford first. So I just accepted. The current thing that people do, I did not. Stanford obviously is a great university. What can I say? And I wanted to, you know, get graduate degrees in EE, electrical engineering. It was an amazing experience.
It sounds like a conversation there with a professor triggered, you know, you're getting in motion and with the venture world and becoming a founder. So what happened during that discussion?
During my studies, my PhD advisor was Dr. Martin Hellman, who actually invented public key cryptography. And, you know, he started an area, not just a company. You know, the world actually changed with the introduction of public key cryptography. I was just fortunate to be there. I developed, you know, patents and I developed techniques there that became standards later on. So my name kind of became known. Maybe lucky because my advisor was a famous guy and actually an awesome person. And you know, that's how I learned about the U.S., because I came from Egypt, which is a very, very different place. At the time, you know, starting a company was, I did not even know what starting a company means at this point. So when I came to the U.S., you know, you learn what this new country has to offer, and it's amazing.
No kidding. So in that, with InfoChip, you know, what ended up being the outcome there?
So InfoChip was after I spent a few years at Hewlett Packard Labs. My boss actually started the company and he said, hey, you got to join me. So I was the third founder of that company.
How was that journey for you? Because, I mean, obviously, you know, that ended up going through the whole, you know, journey of the cycles of a company. So reaching the finish line and being able to see that full landscape as an entrepreneur, too, I find that it gives you a ton of visibility. So how was that experience for you?
It was incredible, I'll tell you, because I actually built the original prototype. There were only three of us, by the way. So I built the original prototype of the product that we were building, and I hired the engineering teams and ended up a manager of engineering, which I never actually did anything like that before. So I learned how to manage people, and I learned how to present to boards and, you know, things that you only get that experience when you're actually part of a startup. And I was very early, so you got to get that by default. It is what it is, right? But that's how you learn. So I learned on the job, basically, everything.
And what was that journey like for you? I mean, what was the biggest takeaway from that first experience, from seeing the full cycle with a company like that?
You know, you learn a lot from the mistakes, actually. So, You know, when you're building a product because you believe in the technology is one thing. When you build a product because the market needs it, that's a different thing. And we have a little bit of, we had a little bit of both, actually. But we should have actually studied the product market fit, as we call that today, a little bit more before, you know, I just started to build prototypes day one, basically. I didn't listen to anybody. And you know, the world is actually different. The successful companies produce things that people want to buy, not necessarily the things that are technically elegant. So that I learned, which is actually a very interesting thing to learn.
No kidding. You know, build on data-based versus assumptions, right? You know, and I think that that ultimately, you know, is when you get to hit a nerve. Talking about people here, you know, one thing that you did is instead of going at it again and building another company as a founder, you chose the route of becoming an employee for other companies, you know, whether it was RSA or Netscape, you know, and in fact, it took a bit of time, you know, until you got started with what, you know, would end up becoming your next company, Securify. But why did you choose that path versus going at it again as a founder one more time?
Look, the RSA opportunity was one of a kind because it brought me back to cryptography, which is was my original area as a graduate student. And at the time, cryptography was just not a commercial activity. There were no commercial products in cryptography. It was only a government, you know, intelligence thing. So that it's not that I intentionally wanted to be an employee. It's that I just stumbled on RSA, literally. And they were in the Bay Area where I live, so I just found them. It was a very small company. So I got to bring sort of that discipline of managing engineering into that organization, which, you know, they had the smartest engineers, but there were like 7 or 8 people in the company when I joined. And you know, we produce software products that people still depend on, you know, to run cryptography, which is incredible, right?
How does that lead you then to the opportunity of becoming chief scientist of Netscape, which, you know, perhaps people are going to be more familiar with, and being able to see, like, you know, get the opportunity of working with people like Marc Andreessen or Jim Clark. I mean, it really a spectacular, you know, experience.
So there is actually a real story here. This is the real story.
Let's hear it.
So, you know, I was looking around, what else should I do? I was getting an itch. So I found an IDC conference, believe it or not, you know, IDC used to do conferences in the early 90s. So in 94, there was a conference. I said, oh, I got to learn more about this industry. I don't know enough. So I actually went there. And here is Jim Clark, the same Jim Clark, giving a presentation. So I said, oh, I got to go listen to that guy. Jim Clark was, in fact, a Stanford professor when I was a grad student in computer graphics. He's actually very famous in computer graphics. So I go in there and I listen and you know, he's talking about cryptography. And I say, why is Jim Clark talking about cryptography? I don't get this. So I went to him after his presentation, said, you know, why are you talking about cryptography? You know, it's not really your area. I studied that, you know, that kind of thing. So I ended up, so he was actually, he was talking about what Netscape needs to do with cryptography effectively. But he didn't, you know, talk about the company because it was still very early in the company's lifetime. And I ended up joining because I saw him speak at IDC just randomly. It's just, you know, a matter of taking advantage of opportunities that pop in front of you. Nothing more, nothing less.
So how was it like working with him and being able to fight, you know, with the Microsofts of the world and other people that were trying to take the food off your table?
Man, that was fun. That was really fun. So Netscape had a big appetite. Now, you know, I remember interviewing with Marc Andreessen at a small coffee shop in downtown Palo Alto here. And he says, you know, we're going to change the world. And I said, well, cool. Let's go change the world. So he hired me. And I actually sent him an email many, many, many years later saying, remember you two? Of course, he doesn't remember when he was interviewing me. I remember because I was being interviewed. And I said, you told me that we're going to change the world. We definitely did change the world. The world is a completely different place. And, you know, Netscape played a huge role in that change. It was not a small thing. The team was incredible. The team that the Netscape management put together was incredible. The best engineering team I've ever seen. They were right on top of every single thing. And Microsoft woke up. Microsoft is tough. So, you know, they recognized that we're going to compete with them. And, you know, that was the target for them. It's kind of natural.
Well, it sounds that this journey really gave you the perspective to know that once an entrepreneur, always an entrepreneur. No, and yeah. In fact, Securify was the next chapter. So how did the idea of Securify come knocking, especially, you know, while you were in such an exciting adventure with Netscape?
So, you know, my first 2 years, I stayed about 4 years at Netscape. My first 2 years, we were building the SSL specs and putting it in the products and, you know, talking to people and that kind of thing. My last couple of years were actually customer facing for the most part. The reason was Netscape was out selling to large enterprises new ideas. What do you know? What nobody knew what an intranet was at that point in time. You know, people had their own LANs and stuff like this. So there was no knowledge of what these things are. But Netscape was awesome at selling things. So they were selling intranets to companies. And then the people will ask security questions. So where do I put this? And is this going to expose me? So Netscape came to me and said, look, we need to talk to customers about security. And basically, you're it. So I became the technical talking head about security for a lot of Netscape customers. So this is what I learned, how to talk to customers, actually. And that is what positioned me to do Securify, because I saw what people were running and the overall security of these networks was not great. So, you know, we put a good team together at Securify and we started to do consulting for, you know, whoever needed security consulting and you know.
What would you say is the biggest lesson that you've learned about talking to customers? Because I mean, I heard you now say that a couple of times, you know, before, you know, product market fit to a big one. So what would you say has been your biggest take when it comes to talking to customers?
People like to talk if you give them the opportunity to speak without being recorded. Now we're recording this, so this is good. But people like to share issues, because I'm talking to customers about very specific things. I'm not selling, you know, random things. We were talking about the security of their enterprise, the cybersecurity. It was not called cyber at the time, but the cybersecurity of their enterprise. So gaining knowledge about the real world was the most important thing. It's very easy for a technologist to imagine things. Think of a good, you know, technology that could perhaps solve something. And hearing what people's problems really were, and maybe there's something simpler that they can use to solve the problem. That kind of education only happens when you talk to customers, because they tell you what the real stuff is.
Hey, guys. So pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard, and already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on, when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
So let's talk about Securify real quick here. You know, how was that journey like? Because obviously there you guys got a good exit. You know, investors got 5x their money. But how was this, for example, going through this M&A process different than perhaps going through the first acquisition that you went through?
Because this was me. I was the CEO. I was the main founder. I had two other co-founders, by the way. So there were three of us as co-founders, but I was the CEO. And I was the guy who raised the money for the company, and I was the guy who sold it. So it's a different thing. And I became a domain person. So I started out as a cryptographer in a technical sense, but I became a cybersecurity expert just through the process of talking to customers and selling consulting things and talking to, you know, I have dear friends who are CISOs who I still cherish that relationship until now that I learned from.
And, you know, there too, there was like a spin-off that happened, you know, on the product. So
one of everything, my friend, one of everything.
It's unbelievable. You know, the spin-off, you know, why did you guys do the spin-off? And then what did that look like?
So Kroll, who actually acquired the company at you know, 99, wanted the consulting business. We were developing a product in the middle of the consulting business. So there was sort of a common decision to spin off the product out of that company and build a separate organization still called Securify. Kroll had continued to have the security consulting business until now, actually. It's continued to grow. But we were, you know, more of product people. So we decided, hey, let's spin this off. You know, Kroll supported it. We raised some $35 million at the time. And that was 2001, not the easiest time to raise money. So I did all of these also. So I was also leading that effort, talked to a large number of investors and had to satisfy a parent company that this will succeed.
Now, you even hired a CEO there. But one thing, you know, one thing led to the next. And eventually, you know, this chapter, you know, closes and a new one opens. And that new one, you know, basically, you know, had you involved in like, you know, with like 30 security companies, and whether it was as an investor, an advisor, I guess what kind of patterns, you know, from working with so many companies, what kind of patterns did you get to learn about success and failure when it comes to hyper growth companies?
People is the most important thing. You know, when you work with so many people, you develop a sense of who you can actually work with to develop something successful. You know, I was a board member in a company called Tumbleweed from 2003. And, you know, in 2006 or somewhere thereabouts, I was asked to also become CTO. And the chairman became the CEO. And we kind of took the company to another exit. So that exited to a company called Axway in 2008. And that was the goal of this whole thing, was to do this. So you learn what type of people you can actually build success with is the most important thing. By far.
What was that time, you know, when all of a sudden a call with Mark Benioff, you know, comes showing up?
So I got a call from a friend saying, hey, you know, it looks like Salesforce is looking for a security CTO. So I pinged Mark. And I knew Mark from before because he was actually an angel investor in the first Securify. Yeah. So I kind of discovered, I ended up talking to a few people and discovered that this is a real thing. The company was going through growth because, you know, Salesforce originally was CRM for small to medium kind of companies, and it started to grow and grow, and then the security issue became bigger. So, you know, being a security CTO for a company that's growing at that rate appeared to be very, very advantageous. I loved the idea. And I stayed there for 10 years, and I became basically a security operator. But I also developed a buyer sense. So you know how it is when you're building a company, you're selling your product to people. When you're actually a buyer, you have a very different view of what things people could or could not buy. So that complemented my journey, basically.
So 10 years that you spent there, and you know, also 10x growth. What was it like to work and, you know, closely with one of the best entrepreneurs of our generation right now, you know, with Mark Benioff.
He's amazing. How was that like? He really is amazing. And that's not just as an entrepreneur. He's an amazing leader. He's an amazing manager. And he's one of the best human beings you're ever going to see. I mean, he's just the complete package, basically.
What would you say are the key traits that make him such an incredible, you know, entrepreneur and also leader?
You know, he started Salesforce with kind of a few principles that he really adopted, and he stuck to it. The thing that sticks to my mind is transparency. He shared with his people things that most other companies didn't. Now, the newer companies are actually following what he did. So transparency with your own employees is such a magnificent thing, because people start to think about how do I make the company better, not just about how do I do my job. And these are very different things. So this is what I learned. And, you know, there wasn't a day or a week or a month during my tenure there that I did not learn a new thing. Not just because of him personally, but because of the team that he had built.
So it sounds like you were having an amazing time as an operator, you know, before you were also an entrepreneur. So why changing the side of the table to the investor side?
You know, 10 years is a long time. What am I going to say? I did a lot. We built an amazing security team. The company's grown quite a bit. It became a large enterprise by the time I left. And I've known my colleagues at Evolution Equity for years before, as I told you. So being a partner in a venture fund became the right thing to do. It just completes the story.
So, and by the way, quite the fun too. You know, $2 billion. So tell us about what you're up to now with Evolution.
We closed Fund 3 several months back. It's a $1 billion fund. It's the largest cybersecurity specific fund actually in the entire industry, and I get to have fun. I talk to startup leaders. I talk to founders and CEOs. You know, we invest in the companies that make sense for the fund, of course. But just being in the industry is amazing, because it's at the end of the day, for someone like myself, it's about having an impact. And having an impact through a lot of startups is actually bigger than any one company could possibly be. So it was a very appealing thing when the opportunity came up.
So what do you typically look in companies? You know, what are those companies that you are like, my God, I need to invest in this company?
So that depends on the stage of the company. And we invest in any stage. So if it's a real early stage, like a seed or a series A kind of company, people are the most important thing. Because founders actually succeed and fail, not products and not anything else. It's about the people. So, you know, if you run into a person that you've either worked with before or you interacted with as a customer or a vendor or whatever, and you know who they are, and then they start a company, then you get grabbed to this, because you know that they will just succeed. They're just, the mentality is refuse to fail. They will always. So the very early stage. The second thing is, which market are they trying to address? Because if you build the best product in a tiny market, that may be very clever and maybe people will love it. But as an exit for a fund is not the most important thing. So we want large companies to exit, right? So a big market is actually the second most important thing. And then the technology, the product, you know, everything else is sort of how does that fit with what customers want to get? And that kind of thing becomes the number three. If we're investing in a later stage, then the growth of the company becomes really important. How the company is doing, what is the revenue, what is the growth rates, you know, what is the customer uptake? We talk to their customers and that. So it's a slightly different. The people are still the most important thing, but it's actually a somewhat different conversation, because they establish the product market fit in a later stage, clearly. You know, are they going to build different products? Are they going to update the current product? And you know, being involved in sort of product planning and this kind of thing is just very enjoyable.
What are some of the trends that you're seeing right now in cybersecurity?
AI. Dot. AI is taking over the world. And it's kind of funny because I went to grad school, you know, in the early 80s where AI existed back then, believe it or not. It's not a new thing. The fact that the compute power grew so much, you know, over the last few years that people can actually do useful things with these AI models, that's what's changing the world. But there are, I think, almost every single cybersecurity company is working on or has done, you know, how do we use AI to improve our product? Every single company is doing that. Plus, you know, what kind of danger is AI going to introduce to the computer? There is the flip side of the coin, which is AI going to make something more dangerous than it is now? And how do we secure the actual AI itself? So you know, it's just the world is actually different than just 2 years ago. It's amazing.
So one thing that I'd like to ask you here is I want to put you into a time machine, Tahir, and I want to bring you back in time. I want to bring you back in time to that moment where you were giving your notice at Hewlett-Packard. And that was the moment where you were going to be an entrepreneur, you know, entering the world of venture. And let's say to that younger self that is coming out of the office at Hewlett-Packard, you're able to stop that younger self in the tracks and you're able to give that younger self one piece of advice before launching a company. What would that be and why, given what you know now?
So first of all, I was scared like crazy. You know, here am I. And I mean, Hewlett-Packard at the time was one of the largest companies in the space for sure. And, you know, it's comfortable living and things are great. And here I'm leaving to go to a tiny little company with three people. What I did not do enough was talk to people. I learned that on the job. Learning beforehand, you know, how this new company going to interact with the world was not something I personally did enough of. I had a technical vision, you know, that said data compression will change how the world, you know, would deal with things. And maybe I was right, but there were different things. When you talk to actual customers who could use these products, we would have heard slightly different answers and maybe we would build something else. And maybe that company would have been a $1 billion company. So, you know, that's probably the one thing that I did not do enough of.
So, Tahir, for the people that are listening that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
Oh, boy. I'm easy to find. It's LinkedIn is the answer. Yeah, I have close to 20,000 followers on LinkedIn. So that's the easiest way.
My God. Amazing. Well, hey, Tahir, it's been such an honor to have you on the show today. So really, thank you so, so much for taking the time to be with us.
Thanks, Alejandro. I really appreciate the time.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening and see you at the next episode.